Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really interesting book from back in 2008 called Big Money, Little Effort.
Mm-hmm.
Think of this as, well, kind of your shortcut to understanding a systematic approach to long-term stock market investing.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Our mission today is to really pull out the core ideas, the actionable stuff, so you can navigate this whole area, which can feel, you know, pretty overwhelming sometimes.
Definitely. And hopefully with more clarity, maybe less stress.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we're digging into this book. The author, he talks about his own path, right? From what he calls an uninspiring education, all the way to being a hedge fund manager who, get this, retired at 33.
Wow, 33. That's something.
Right. And he lays out his system, the long-term investment system. It's a mechanical strategy, very rule-based. And he claims it's beaten, well, a lot of fund managers over years and years, decades actually, based on his trading and historical tests.
Okay, so it's not just theory. He's talking practical application. And the book gets into specific debates too, like market timing versus just buying and holding.
Yeah, that classic one. Plus the psychology of investing, which is huge. And also, you know, where should you actually put your money? Asset allocation.
Right. So why should you, the listener, care about this?
Well, if you've been looking for a way to invest for the long run that's, like, clear and disciplined.
Yeah.
Something that doesn't mean you're glued to stock tickers all day or need a finance degree.
Yeah.
Then this deep dive is probably for you. We're going to unpack this system, which is really designed to spot and hopefully profit from those big long-term market trends.
Consider it a way to maybe get a handle on a strategy that could be profitable without getting totally bogged down in all the market noise and daily news cycles.
Exactly. A shortcut, like you said.
Okay, let's get into it then. The book really kicks off by questioning a lot of the traditional financial advice you hear, especially about fund managers. He sounds pretty skeptical.
He really is. And what's interesting is how he backs it up. He points to a Warren Buffett quote from 07 in the Sunday Times, I think. Even Buffett admitted that simple index trackers, you know, funds that just follow the market.
Right, like an S&P 500 tracker.
Exactly. They tend to beat most active fund managers in the long run. The book hammers this stat that only a tiny fraction of managers actually outperform their benchmark consistently.
And why is that? Is it just fees or?
Fees are a big part, yeah. But it's also just incredibly hard to consistently make better calls than the entire market day in, day out, especially after those costs.
That makes sense. And he throws in this this anecdote that really challenges the idea of expertise, doesn't he? About a little girl.
Oh, yeah. The 5-year-old.
Yeah.
From the British press. Apparently, she just randomly picked stocks for a virtual portfolio.
Uh-huh.
And she beat the pros, not just for a week, but over a whole year. Hers was the only portfolio that actually made money in that particular competition. It's wild.
So what's the point there, that it's all just luck?
Well, maybe not all luck, but the author uses it to show how hard consistent outperformance really is. And maybe, just maybe, random chance looks pretty good sometimes, especially short term. It definitely makes you question the value of some expert picks.
And the critique doesn't stop with fund managers. He goes after financial advisors too, particularly tied advisors.
Right, those advisors who can only sell products from one company. He warns about them. And even how banks sometimes push products that have high commissions for the seller, but might not be the best fit for the customer. There was some undercover TV report mentioned that showed some pretty questionable sales tactics.
So the takeaway is buyer beware, basically.
Pretty much. He's urging you, the investor, to be really critical about where advice is coming from. There's often an inherent conflict of interest if the advisor gets paid more to sell you product A versus product B. Right?
Yeah, their incentive might not be your best interest.
Exactly.
So if tied advisors and commission-based selling are potentially problematic, what's the alternative? Does he suggest independent financial advisors, IFAs?
He does mention IFAs, yeah.
Yeah.
He suggests they're worth looking into because they can offer products from lots of different companies, so they might be more objective.
But there's a catch.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
He still points out that most IFAs also earn commissions. So the bottom line is you still need to do your own homework. Understand what you're buying. Don't just blindly trust anyone.
Makes sense. And he gives you some tools for that homework, right? Like specific questions to ask an advisor.
Yeah, six key questions. Things like, you know, what's your own net worth? Basically, do you eat your own cooking?
Huh, right.
And where's your own money invested?
Yeah.
Like, why should I buy this if you wouldn't? And crucially, can I talk to some of your satisfied clients?
Those are pretty direct questions designed to cut through the sales pitch, I guess.
Absolutely. It's about figuring out if their interests really align with yours. Asking about net worth, it gives you a sense of whether they have skin in the game, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And one last warning in this section. Beware of low-risk investments promising crazy high returns quickly.
Right. The too-good-to-be-true scenario. The author really emphasizes that fundamental link, risk and reward. You just can't get unusually high returns without taking on significant risk or getting incredibly lucky, or both. It's a basic principle, but one people forget when they see flashy promises.
If it sounds too good to be true.
It probably is. Simple as that.
Okay, so we've got this picture of skepticism towards traditional advice. The book then shifts focus to the upsides of using a systematic approach. What are the main advantages he highlights?
The biggest one really is taking emotion out of the equation. Fear, greed, wanting to follow the crowd, ego, all that stuff that makes us humans terrible investors sometimes.
Uh-huh. We've all been there. Selling low in a panic, buying high because everyone else is.
Exactly. A system is just rules. It doesn't care about headlines or what your neighbor thinks or if you had a bad day. It just follows the signals. That emotional detachment is key.
That makes a lot of sense. He tells a story about that, right? About a manager going through personal stuff.
Yeah. This anecdote about a wealthy client who wouldn't invest with fund managers if they were going through, like, a divorce or moving house.
Really? Why?
The idea was that those big life stresses could distract the manager, impact their judgment. A system, though, it's immune to that. It just executes based on market data.
And the other huge plus he talks about is backtesting. Can you break that down?
Sure. Backtesting is basically like running your system through a time machine. You apply its rules to historical market data, maybe decades worth, across all sorts of conditions, bull markets, bear markets, crashes.
Okay.
And you see how it would have performed. Did it make money? How much? When did it struggle? What were the drawdowns? It gives you a really solid idea of the system's potential behavior before you risk real money.
So it's like a historical stress test.
Kind of, yeah. For example, if your system follows trends, the backtest might show, okay, when the market goes sideways, don't expect much. But when a big trend kicks in, up or down, that's when it should really shine.
Which is maybe more reliable than just hoping a human manager who's only seen good times can handle a downturn.
Exactly. He contrasts it with that uncertainty. He mentions the story of some bond trader who made millions for years in a bull market, then lost a fortune like $600 million when conditions changed. A system's historical track record, warts and all, gives you more insight.
And the backtesting spits out specific numbers, right? Metrics to look at.
Yeah, tons of data. Like total trades, what percentage were winners, the size of your biggest win, your average win, same for losses. Crucially, the win-loss ratio. How much bigger are your wins than your losses on average?
Yeah.
And things like your longest winning streak, longest losing streak, helps you understand the system's rhythm. The author mentions using software like MetaStock for this.
And for his specific long-term investment system, what did the backtesting show was most important for it to work?
It basically needs the market to have sustained long-term upward trends to be really profitable. But, and this is key, those future trends don't have to look exactly like the past. The system is designed to identify and ride the general upward drift over time.
Got it. So this systematic approach with its historical analysis, how does that feed into the book's perspective on that classic debate, market timing versus just buying and holding?
Well, the book definitely takes a side. It strongly challenges the simple buy and hold forever mantra, especially, you know, when you consider those big market crashes.
He argues that just blindly holding on no matter what can be a recipe for disaster. or at least a lot of pain.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. He points to examples like the nasty bear market in 1973-74, or the dot-com bust with the NASDAQ swinging wildly from 99 to 2001.
Right.
Imagine just holding through that, seeing your savings get crushed. The book argues that buy and hold would have been incredibly tough financially and emotionally during periods like those.
That emotional toll is a big factor, isn't it? Just watching your money disappear on paper, even if you tell yourself it'll come back eventually.
Definitely. He highlights that stress. It's easy to say, just hold when things are calm. But when your portfolio is down 30, 40, 50%, it takes serious nerve. And that pressure can make people sell at the absolute worst time, locking in losses.
So the book actually compares the two strategies directly using its system, doesn't it, over a specific period?
Yes. There's a detailed comparison using the long-term investment system versus buy and hold on the S&P 500 from 1995 to 2007.
Oh, what was the result?
Quite significant. The market timing strategy using the system signals to get in and out turned a hypothetical 10,000 pounds into about 45,000 pounds.
Okay.
The buy and hold approach with the same 10,000 pounds ended up around 33,260 pounds. So pretty big difference. And importantly, the system would have gotten you out during the worst of the dot-com crash within that period, reducing the volatility and presumably the stress.
So it wasn't just about potentially higher returns, but also managing risk.
Exactly. The book frames market timing, when done systematically, as a crucial risk management tool. Getting out during downturns protects your capital.
Which then leaves you with more money to reinvest when things pick up again.
Precisely. You can potentially buy back in at lower prices, amplifying your gains during the recovery. It's about defense as much as offense.
There's a quote in there from David Fuller that kind of sums this up nicely.
Yeah, I remember that. In a bull market, most of the surprises will be on the upside. And in a bear market, most of the surprises will be on the downside. It just highlights that the risks aren't symmetrical, you know? Bear markets can be brutal. So adapting your exposure makes sense rather than just passively riding it all the way down.
Okay, so a system offers potential advantages, helps manage emotion, allows for timing. But then there's the human element. The book stresses the psychology of actually following the system, right?
Oh, hugely. He has this blunt quote, systems work is people that don't. It really gets to the heart of it. You can have the best system in the world on paper, but if you don't have the discipline to follow its signals, especially when it feels uncomfortable, then it's useless.
It's easy to second guess, isn't it? The system says sell, but the news looks good, or your gut says wait.
Exactly. And the book warns strongly against that. Don't interfere. Don't try to outsmart the system you chose. Don't listen to random opinions from, you know, armchair investors or media pundits. Once you commit, you follow the rules. Period.
Trust the process, basically.
Trust the process you validated through backtesting. And he boils down what successful system investing requires.
Which is?
Patience first. Patience to wait for a signal, which might take months sometimes. Then discipline to act immediately when the signal comes. Then patience again to let profitable trades run. And finally, the discipline to cut losses or take profits when the system says out.
So patience and discipline sounds simple, but probably isn't easy in practice.
Not at all. It requires keeping your emotions completely separate from your trading decisions.
Interestingly, the book suggests that the best systems aren't necessarily the most complicated ones.
Right. He argues that often, quite simple systems, ones that just focus on identifying and following those major long-term trends, are enough to beat most investors. He even admits he tried building more complex systems himself, but found simplicity often worked better.
Keep it simple, stupid. The KISS principle.
Yeah, exactly. There's a quote from Dennis Tilly mentioned, warning about over-optimizing. Making a system too complex might make it look amazing in backtests on past data.
Uh-huh.
But it risks being curve-fitted. It might be so tailored to the past that it breaks when future market behavior inevitably changes. Simpler systems tend to be more robust over time.
And the ultimate proof of concept for simple, teachable rules leading to success is that Turtles experiment story, isn't it?
Oh, the Turtles. Yeah, that's a classic. Richard Dennis, a legendary trader, basically had a bet with his partner, Bill Eckhart. Dennis believed trading could be taught. Eckhart thought it was innate talent.
So Dennis recruited a bunch of ordinary people.
Exactly. People from all walks of life, accountants, blackjack players, I think even a musician or juggler. Taught them a straightforward set of trend-following rules, gave them his own money to trade, and many of them became incredibly successful traders. Some are still huge names in the fund management world today. It was powerful proof that you can teach a systematic approach and that simple rules, followed with discipline, can work
It really drives home that maybe you don't need to be a Wall Street genius.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into the nuts and bolts of the system in the book. The long-term investment system. What's its core philosophy?
It's all about those major long-term trends. Forget the daily wiggles. The goal is to identify the big underlying market movements and just ride them. The author credits Richard Donchian, real pioneer in trend following, as inspiration.
Makes sense. Big trends are where the big money is made, potentially. And technically, how does it identify these trends?
Moving averages are key. The book emphasizes that many successful technical strategies use them. And this one does too. They help smooth out the day-to-day price noise so you can see the bigger picture, the underlying trend, more clearly.
So it looks at average prices over a certain period.
Exactly. And based on those moving averages, the system is really simple in its output. It's either buy or sell.
Just two modes.
Yep. Buy means you should be invested in the stock market. Sell means get out completely, put your cash into something safe, like an interest-bearing savings account, and wait for the next buy signal. Very black and white, in or out.
Okay, that sounds straightforward. Now, for practicalities, if someone wanted to actually, you know, try and follow this, how would they do it? The book gives some guidance.
It does. It suggests using online charting websites. Futuresource.com is mentioned specifically, though others would work. The key is setting up weekly charts for the major stock market indices.
Weekly, not daily.
Right. Weekly charts filter out a lot of that short-term noise. He lists the main ones. S&P 500, Dow, NASDAQ 100 for the U.S., FTSE 100 for the U.K., DAX for Germany, CAC for France, Nikkei for Japan, Hang Seng for Hong Kong.
Got it. And then you add the moving averages to these weekly charts.
Yes. The book gives specific instructions. Add a moving average indicator, usually found in the charting tools, and set the parameters. He uses three. One, based on the average close the last 30 weeks, and then two, based on the average close the last 50 weeks.
Okay, 30-week and 50-week averages, those are the specific numbers for this system.
Those are the ones detailed in the book, yes.
And crucially, you only look at this once a week.
That's vital. Only do the analysis after the market has closed for the week. So Saturday or Sunday is ideal. You need that final weekly closing price for the moving averages to be calculated correctly for the system signals. It stops you reacting to midweek jitters.
Right, discipline again. Okay, so you get a signal buy or sell from the system on your chosen index. The next question is, what exactly do you buy or sell? Where does the money go? The book talks asset allocation and risks here.
Yeah, it breaks down risk into three types. First, market risk, the risk that the whole market goes down.
Yeah.
Second, security risk, where you pick the wrong individual stock, even if the market's okay.
Uh-huh.
And third, product risk, the risk your chosen fund or investment product just doesn't perform well, maybe due to high fees or bad management.
And using this system on a broad market index helps with these.
That's the argument. Timing the index directly tackles market risk. You aim to be out when the market risk is high, i.e. in a downtrend. And by investing in the index itself, usually via an index fund, you massively reduce security risk because you're instantly diversified across hundreds, sometimes thousands, of stocks.
You're not betting on just one company. Like the example you used, the Dow might be up 30%, but Microsoft could be flat for that year.
Exactly. That's security risk in action. If you just bought Microsoft, you'd have missed the market game. Buying the index means you capture the overall market performance, good and bad stocks averaged out.
And product risk. How do you minimize that according to the book?
The recommendation is strongly towards low-cost tracker funds or exchange-traded funds, ETFs. These are designed specifically to just replicate an index's performance minus a very small fee.
So less chance of a human manager messing it up or charging high fees that eat into returns.
Precisely. The book quotes stats showing how many active managers fail to beat their index benchmark after fees. Trackers and ETFs basically eliminate that manager risk and keep costs super low. It's a simple, efficient way to get market exposure when the system says buy.
Does the book say anything about using the system for individual stocks or sectors?
It touches on it. It suggests the system can act as a filter, like only look for stocks to buy when the overall market system is on a buy signal. Makes sense, right?
Right.
Easier for a stock to go up when the whole market's rising. It gives examples like British Airways or BHP Billiton, where the system seemingly worked on individual charts. But it also cautions that this adds back that security risk picking the right stock is hard. So for most people, especially less experienced investors, sticking with the broad index trackers is probably the safer, simpler route.
Keep it simple again. And just to be clear, the book lists those major global indices people can track.
Yeah, it details the main ones we mentioned earlier, S&P 500, Dow, NASDAQ Q100, FTSE 100, DAX 30, CAC 40, Nikkei 225, Hang Seng. It gives a little background on what they represent and their ticker symbols for charting.
And it makes the point that these indices aren't static, right? Companies come and go.
That's a really important feature. Indices get updated regularly. Poorly performing companies drop out. Successful ones get added. It's like automatic portfolio management, constantly refreshing to reflect the current leaders. Another benefit of index investing.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Finally, the book gets really specific and shows the actual historical performance of this long-term investment system applied to the S&P 500 over a very long period, 1951 to 2007. What did that track record look like?
It's pretty compelling data. Over those 56 years, the system generated 21 trades, so only out one trade every 2.5 years, roughly.
Wow, very long term.
Definitely. Of those 21 trades, 15 were winners, so that's a 71% win rate. The biggest single gain was huge, almost 179%. The average profit per trade was nearly 35%.
Okay, and the losses, how did it manage the downside?
The largest loss on any single trade was just under 10%, and the average loss was only about 5.5%.
So the wins were much bigger than the losses, on average.
Significantly. The profit to loss ratio worked out at about 6.3 to 1, meaning the average winning trade was over 6 times bigger than the average losing trade. That's a key metric for trend-following systems letting winners run and cutting losers relatively quickly.
That sounds like a recipe for long-term growth, if it holds up.
That's the idea. Its strength is clearly capturing those big, multi-year bull markets. And it provides that protection in bear markets by going to cash. The weakness, as the book acknowledges, is that it needs trends. If the market just chops sideways for a long time, a system like this can get whipsawed, generating small losses or gains.
How did it handle specific events like the 1987 crash? That must have tested it.
Interestingly, the system was actually on a buy signal leading into the 87 crash and didn't signal sell immediately after. Despite that huge one-day drop, the position for that entire period still ended up being profitable, albeit only slightly for the year 1987 itself. It kind of rode through the volatility, showing some resilience.
Well, this has certainly been a comprehensive deep dive into big money, little effort. If you had to boil it down, what are the main takeaways for our listener?
I think the core idea is that taking a systematic, long-term trend-following approach like this system offers a really disciplined alternative to emotional investing or just relying on standard financial advice.
Right.
It potentially helps manage risk, cuts out emotional noise, and the historical data, at least for the S&P 500 back then, suggests it had the potential to capture big gains in uptrends while offering some protection in downtrends.
A framework for potentially growing wealth with less day-to-day stress.
That's the promise, yeah.
Okay, powerful stuff. And what final thought should we leave our listener mulling over?
Well, given this historical evidence, a system navigating booms and busts for over 50 years, maybe it's worth asking yourself, what assumptions do you hold about needing to be constantly active in the market or needing complex strategies? Could a simpler, more patient, rule-based approach actually be more effective for your long-term goals? This deep dive gives you one example, a framework. Perhaps the next step for you is exploring systematic investing further, maybe even looking into backtesting yourself. It could be a path towards taking more control and maybe achieving those big money results with, relatively speaking, little effort in terms of daily churn.
Food for thought indeed. Thanks for unpacking all that.
My pleasure.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.